Good afternoon, 7 minutes past 12 on the Manhood Line in session till 1. We've had 52,379 tests for COVID-19 since the start of all this last year. 157 people are booked in today for tests. There was one new case yesterday, which currently can't be linked to any other cases. The individual self-isolating along with members of their household. Further tests will be offered and contact tracing continues. So we have 13 active cases on the Isle of Man. Two people currently in Nobles Hospital. One person is in ICU. There are 843 people currently self-isolating, and the vaccination dashboard shows 55,298 first doses have been administered, 15,699 second doses administered. We're currently holding 8,010 shots of vaccine in stock, and 1,934 people are booked in for jabs in the next week or so. So here we go, another case. The island's border restrictions change this weekend. If you test positive for COVID-19, you've got to isolate for 10 days, not 14 days. You get that? 10 days, not 14 days. It's all changing. There were two big announcements at the government media briefing yesterday.
In times gone by, one new case of COVID-19 from an unknown source would have prompted a coronavirus conference all of its own. But the spotlight was taken away from that one new case in Middle yesterday, as the Chief Minister had not one but two big announcements to make. Anyone who'd cast an eye over the revised exit strategy last week would have seen the first date for a change in the border policy, a move to level 3 on the 1st of May. Well, Chief Minister Howard Quayle was there yesterday to say we would be hitting that target.
I can confirm that we remain committed to a move from level 4 to level 3 of our borders framework on Saturday. This means that family, partners and property owners will all be able to travel to the island. Shared isolation and households will be introduced, and the period of isolation for travellers will reduce from 14 to 7 days, subject to undergoing testing.
Mr. Quayle argued the move was justified at this stage, saying it was proportionate to our new circumstances. It was a comment that brought back that old phrase, data, not dates. And what are our current circumstances? Well, over the weekend, our vaccine rollout surpassed 70,000 doses delivered. So far, more than 54,000 locals have received their first jab, while just under 16,000 have had their second. Meanwhile, and crucially, the number of cases in the UK has come right down. According to the Health Minister, the infection rate across the water currently stands at 42 in 100,000 people, over a 14-day rolling average. If that figure drops below 30 in 100,000, we could go further in the exit strategy. A question from the media highlighted some comments from the public who said, in fact, with the data looking so promising, why can't we go that one step further to level 2 of the borders? David Ashford put it down to one thing, certainty.
The important thing is that we see it consistently. What we don't want to be doing, and we've designed this whole thing and the exit strategy around this, is we don't want to be bouncing backwards and forwards between the different border levels. Now, the UK themselves have said, and Professor Chris Whitty has put out at many press conferences, that while things are starting to stabilise, they can't say with any certainty they're going to remain there and they're not going to see a bounce back up. We need to be confident that we're in a period where we can sustain our border levels, because bouncing up and down between the levels not only gets confusing, but it's not a benefit for anyone either if people haven't got that level of certainty.
Well, like our neighbours in the UK, we're heading down a path of living with the virus rather than eliminating it from our island altogether.
How do you feel about that? Mr. Ashford said we don't want to be bouncing up and down. We don't want to be going from pillar to post, as it were. The border restrictions change this weekend. So if you test positive for COVID-19, you've only got to isolate for 10 days, not 14. Any thoughts on that? And where we are really living with, everybody's talking about it now, living with the virus. I don't understand, said Jack. The virus now has only a 10-day incubation time. When we've been browbeaten for the last 8 months, the Kent variant has 14 to 21-day incubation period. What's changed? We rush people out now in 10 days when the virus can still not show till day 14. I think they're mixed messages. The not clear instructions. A bit of a shambles. I do hope we don't live to regret this. Look at India, says Jack. Barbara's on the man in line now. Hello, Barbara.
Well, hello there. I just want to know why there's no visitor at Noble's Hospital.
It started last week, didn't it? That was part
of
the
Thursday.
Yeah, their strategy. Why? Have you got a relative in the hospital?
Yes, yes.
What did they say at the time?
They just, when we come out at 4 o'clock after visiting, they said there's no more visiting now for 48 hours. And then I keep phoning up every morning to see if it's changed, but no visiting. And that's all they tell you.
And presumably this is because of COVID? Did they say it's because of COVID?
Yes. There's only two cases. But we've been up before and there's only been one or two people in, you know.
And now this is across all wards, isn't it, Barbara?
I reckon. Well, my brother's in Ward 9.
Do you know, we've not had any more word on that, apart from them saying that they were stopping hospital visiting.
Yes.
Well, we'll try and get to the bottom of that, Barbara. How long's your brother been in?
Just over a fortnight now.
And you phoned today, did you?
I've been talking to him on the phone.
Right.
Yes.
And
yes.
The hospital is still saying... No
visiting.
Wow. Well, we'll get to the bottom of that, Barbara.
Yes. Even yesterday, you know, the minister never mentioned anything about the hospital.
No, you're quite right. It kind of slipped in last week, didn't it? And nobody actually said why it was. Okay. Right. We'll try and get to the bottom of that, Barbara.
All right. Thanks.
I appreciate
for that.
It. All right. Thanks for calling us today. If you've got a friend or relative in Nobles and they've actually given a reason why there's no hospital visiting, then by all means, get in touch, texting or emailing or call as well. Text 166177, email studio@maxradio.com. Barbara, thank you for that. Good to talk to you. It's 14 minutes past 12. Further isolation measures are being introduced after the briefing yesterday. This is exactly where we are with the isolation measures.
Chief Minister Howard Quayle announced further measures regarding self-isolation.
Anyone who tests positive for the virus will need to isolate for 10 instead of 14 days. An end to isolation will still be subject to a negative exit test so that we know someone with the virus is no longer infectious. This reduction in the self-isolation period also applies for other members in the household who will need to take part in surveillance testing. As part of this review, the Council of Ministers also considered how isolation requirements might be adapted for high-risk contacts and their households. We agreed that, also from tomorrow, anyone who is identified as being a high-risk contact of someone who has tested positive for the virus but who lives in a different household now only needs to isolate for 10 instead of 14 days, again subject to entry and exit tests. These high-risk contacts will also be able to leave the house for exercise once a day after they have received their first negative test result. Other people in the household of a high-risk contact will no longer have to isolate if the high-risk contact returns a negative test result. Vigilance here by everyone in the household of a high-risk contact will be extremely important. These changes come into force from 1 minute past midnight tonight in tomorrow morning and will apply retrospectively to those currently in isolation.
Well, like our favourite TV series, as the season draws to an end, we're treated to a double bill episode. If you feel many questions still needed answering last night, don't worry, as more information about all of the latest changes are due to be made at the next briefing, expected to take place on Thursday. In the meantime, though, if you want to listen back to yesterday's conference, you can do so via manxradio.com.
Well, we'll wait and see what happens on Thursday. Well, the news about hospital visiting, it's suspended due to that cluster of COVID-19 identified on the Isle of Man. from 4 o'clock on Thursday. Restrictions in place, Nobles, Ramsey Cottage and Mananan Court as well. So just one of a number of changes that Manx Care, the new boys in town, Manx Care, following those 5 new cases which were announced last week. A small number of unexplained cases is what they call it. Anybody who enters a health or care facility now required to wear a medical grade face covering, which will be provided as well. GP practices, dental practices providing health services, NHS services, and opticians revert back to how they operated during lockdown periods. Lots of people, shall I say, confused, a bit wrong-footed by all this. I worry about the direction that the Isle of Man suddenly has adopted. The UK remains in a lockdown, steadily emerging from it in science-led steps. Last Monday, we had our own lockdown rules withdrawn completely. We're told to make our own decisions in a situation in which the community-transmitted cases are breaking out. Our government has ceased, really, to be concerned. This is John's word, but John W.'s words. Ceased to be concerned about keeping us all alive. Well, I'm sure they'd contend that. And it appears to have declared that we're all now expendable, with our borders being rushed open to put us at even more risk, says John. Gary just asked, where was Dr. Hewitt during the briefing yesterday? Seems a bit strange. She's always advocated 14 to 21 day isolation, and it's all changing fast. I didn't hear or see her yesterday. The border opening is amazing, says Paul. It shows how far we've come and how well the vaccine is working. We have to stop looking at the daily cases. Maybe just keep an eye on the hospital admissions. It doesn't matter if 80,000 people test positive, if only 5 end up in hospital, says Paul. Interesting as well, that note when Ashley Tracy was on from Jersey yesterday, saying they're dismantling that hospital of theirs. £15 million they paid for it. The Nightingale Hospital in Jersey, without a bed being slept in. But obviously they felt great comfort, really, from having a Nightingale Hospital. I think we were offered one and didn't take it. But they've always been very, very concerned about protecting the ICU capacity on the Isle of Man. And maybe with the vaccine becoming more and more prevalent in the population, they're less and less concerned. But we'll find out on Thursday. It will be more than interesting to know where we move forward. It just seems inevitable that at some point the borders are going to reopen. The taxpayers' money is being spent on the sea terminal in Liverpool. Same excuses as the promenade. Well, I don't think there are any unexploded bombs on the promenade. So it's not quite the same excuses, John. Fault of COVID and the bow thrusters on the new ship for delays and the increased price. You would have thought they'd figured that out. This is about the new sea terminal in Liverpool. It's going to cost a lot more because they're having to strengthen the wall there on the docks for the bow thrusters, particularly when the new Mananan comes in, because she's big and butch and beefy, and industrial-sized bow thrusters could blow the whole thing away. But it is costing a lot more money, and you kind of just that's almost inevitable nowadays, isn't it? That new sea terminal in Liverpool, which is due to be opened. Well, who knows when it's due to be opened, but the Department of Infrastructure, the Minister for Infrastructure, Tim Baker, was on his floor in the House of Keys today saying that COVID has added another 5 million. How about that? £5 million has been added on to our new ferry terminal in Liverpool. On top of that, it's expected there's going to be an extra 5% for other reasons. Unexploded World War II bombs have been dealt with, and the strain on the seawalls created by the powerful bow thrusters on the new Manxman as well. Here's what... You do sometimes feel sorry for Mr. Baker. He gets given all these cards to play. Here's what he had to say today about the new ferry terminal.
In terms of the financial aspects, Mr. Speaker, there are 3 significant aspects to consider. Firstly, and most importantly, is the issue of the coronavirus pandemic. There's no getting away from this one. The contracts were in place long before we knew of COVID-19. The contractual risk sits clearly with the client. The quantum of that risk is monitored and calculated by a cost consultant, which is AECOM, one of the biggest engineering consultancies in the world. I tell you this, honourable members, because I don't want you to think that I've made up a number to cover all sorts of problems. Their current calculation for the cost impact of COVID on the ferry terminal scheme is £5 million, but we are far from finished, and this figure will increase significantly. Secondly, under the contractual terms, we are obliged to protect our landlord's asset. The most challenging part of that is protecting the quay wall from the effects of the bow thrusters of the steam packet vessels, known as scour protection. The fast craft do not have bow thrusters, but the berth has been designed for use by the Ben McCree and by the new Manxman, which do. Indeed, the Manxman has much more powerful thrusters than those of the Ben. We have not as yet been able to agree a final design of protection with the landlord and its appointed third-party engineer. We will also need to obtain approval from the Marine Management Organisation, the UK body which licenses and regulates marine activities in the seas around England and Wales. We believe that we are close to agreement with the landlord, but until we are in agreement, I cannot be certain about the cost. I have a range of estimated figures for the cost of this, but it's too early to be definitive on this aspect. I do not wish to mislead this Honourable House or the people of the island with an estimate that may well not be right. Once I have a confirmed figure, I will write to members with the detail. Finally, we have met some costs for problems that we did not foresee, or more accurately, that we did foresee, but estimated a cost that was too low. We knew that a site like this would contain a lot of archaeological interest, and so it proved. But some of it took a long time to excavate and created delay cost that exceeded our estimate. We knew that the site had been bombed in the Second World War, and we had specialist surveys, but some of the unexploded bombs were in the way of key work and had to be dealt with, again creating a greater delay cost than expected. Honourable members may well not know about the industry standard NEC4 contracts that we use, but in simple terms, if a delay is not the fault of the contractor, it can claim more time, which means that the daily cost of being on site is added on. For a site as large and complex as this, a delay of one day comes with a price tag of approximately £8,000. We think that these costs will be in the order of 5% of the scheme value, but again, we won't know until the final accounts are reckoned.
Tim Baker today with, well, what's becoming a bit of a trend. COVID has increased the price, the bombs from the Luftwaffe increased the price, and the bow thrusters have increased the price. The new ferry terminal in Liverpool looks very swish, although it is quite a way. You wouldn't want to walk it. Well, you will have to walk it. It's a lot further from the Liver building and that terminal, a mile or so further down the River Mersey. But that's the situation as well. A note in from Rachel who said, can you discuss the cafe at the NSC? It's still empty. It's still depressing. A missed opportunity for an excellent business and a meeting place for after sport and after activity as well. All the leisure pools operate what seems to be successful cafes. The NSC is still out to tender, I understand. It was the tender document was issued, was it the back end of last year, I think. But the NSC, it just depends. I wonder what it is people want from the NSC. Obviously, the NSC is an extremely impressive building. But do you want, I don't know, what would your preference be? Cheap and cheerful or bespoke and hip and trendy and more expensive? Do you want chips, pop, crisps and chocolate? Or do you want something with jus on it? That's gravy, by the way. What's your thoughts on the NSC? Do you use the NSC? And if there was somewhere decent to eat, would you stay for the hour or two, maybe? Just have a chat and a chill with people, or do you just want to get home? The NSC Cafe, out to tender. What do you think it should be? Cheap and cheerful, or bespoke, hip and trendy?
Sure's new pay monthly plans are now unlimited. Unlimited data, unlimited calls and unlimited text from just £20 per month. Whether you're a light social media user who enjoys video calls and downloading movies, or you're a keen gamer, there's a plan that's perfect for you. No limits, no running out of data, and available only from Sure. To find out more, just visit sure.com. That's sure.com. And remember, you'll always get more from Sure. T's and C's apply.
Mike's Motors of Castletown is your local family-owned car, van and motorhome dealer. Down at Mike's Motors, we have a whole range of affordable vehicles with finance easily arranged and part exchange welcome. We don't just sell motorhomes, we buy them too. So if you have a motorhome for sale, don't delay. Call us today. Visit our website, mikesmotors.im, find us on Facebook or call 823-200. That's 823-200 if you're looking to sell your motorhome.
I used to love hearing the birds and my grandchildren playing and my music. It's just not the same now.
It could be again when you arrange a free trial of the latest hearing aid technology with Island Hearing. They provide premium hearing products without the premium price tag, including personalised aftercare from Island Hearing's skilled caring team with microsuction wax removal available too. Arrange your free trial at Island Hearing Port Erin or in Ramsey every Thursday. Call 830 722.
Right now, across the island and beyond, people are searching for their happy, that plum property they've always wanted. And now, it's easier than ever for them to find yours. Plum Properties have become the first estate agent on the island to join Rightmove, the platform that will get your home noticed by thousands more potential buyers. With demand for island homes soaring, it's the perfect time for you to make the right move. So visit plumproperties.im or call 820600 and make your home a plum property.
Tonight here on Max Radio at 6 o'clock, join Kiri Kermode and myself, Simon Clark, for the new series of Countryside.
Simon catches up with Sarah Comish from the Southern District Agricultural Show to talk about the big move.
And also we pay tribute to the loss of one of the farming community on the Isle of Man's perfect gentleman, John Bragazzi, who sadly passed away recently.
That's all in Countryside tonight here on Manx Radio at 6 o'clock. And don't forget you can download or subscribe to the podcast for free at manxradio.com.
The Man in Line with Andy Wint.
It's 28 minutes past 12. Juan's with us now. Hello, Juan.
How are you, Andy? I thought I'd get out of my sun chair today and join in.
It's not summer yet, by the way. It's 7 weeks till summer.
I believe that everyone's fallen asleep in Timble today. Was it 40 minutes it took Tim Baker to answer four questions, I believe? He's the new master of spin now. Jeff Corkish has gone for the steam packet. He's 40 minutes. Like you said there, 5 million, they can just come out with these here numbers out of the sky, 5 million, and blame it on COVID. And I mean, there's going to be so much blamed on COVID, it's unreal, isn't it? So, Did they not consider when they were buying the boat? I mean, the boat's been ordered now the ship's been ordered for quite some time, and thought they might have considered the strength of the seawall before they actually done that. It's kind of bizarre, some of the stuff that comes out, and I wonder how many thousands they're going to put aside for Paul Moulton's unexploded bombs that he keeps throwing at them. it's quite interesting, the stuff that goes on, and like you say, the money that's getting spent. And again, back to the basics of it, it's our money. I know I have a dig at Tim Baker quite a lot, but even when we come to September, and these people go because they're the people we've voted or elected in, and they're the ones that will go. But the problem remains is the people that are actually giving or providing these people with the stuff to go forward and sign these documents off, you know, the civil servants. And I do think that government tends to, not just here, but everywhere, it's working for itself now. Government's an animal. Government used to be invented to work for the people. They seem to be working for themselves a lot these days, and the quangos and the animal grows bigger. It's the Jurassic Park syndrome, I think.
Well, this is all down to, I mean, the new terminal is down to Liverpool pushing the Isle of Man down the Mersey, isn't it? Because they want that space in front of the Liver building is what they want for their new cruise terminal. They want to put their cruise liners there, don't they?
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. But I mean, the people who we've got negotiating these deals, I mean, that's what it boils down to, wherever it's going to be put. I mean, it's down to our civil servants and our politicians to, you know, to sort this out. It's our money that keeps getting thrown at all this year's stuff. My second point I wanted to put today, you know, I normally don't have one. And it's interesting that this last week or so, how people are I think, and the government's failed them, and they're standing there waiting for an answer. And you know, Howard Quayle standing there saying, "Right, that's it. Crack on and get on with your lives." And everyone now, you know, this perception is behaviour, and control of perception, all this kind of stuff, is people are standing there feeling lost, and it's like, well, what are we going to do now? Because Howard hasn't told us what to do. And I'm thinking, well, however old you are, 30, 40, 50, 60, what have you done for the last how many years of your life?
Well, it's a lesson in human nature, isn't it, now, what's happened in the past year?
It's how it's changed people's thinking is I find it quite bizarre. I mean, I've always been I'm not been a conformist, and I just get on with what I do and live my life. But To find people actually standing there now and just waiting for the next breath that government tell them, and again, it's government's advisors. You know, everyone keeps going on about science. Science is only what we know. The advice that they might be getting might be totally wrong. And you know, years down the line, everyone will be going, you know, the non-believers will be saying, I told you so, and the believers will be going, well, what did they stick that in my arm for? I mean, it's all... I just find it bizarre that everyone's standing around waiting for a person to stand up at 4 o'clock in the day and tell them what to do with their lives.
Are you going to have a vaccination, Duan?
Well, you know what? How can I say this, Andy? I'm going to defer for the time. And I'm out of a lot of people. I'm one that really needs to get on with my life and get away and travel. But I'm going to defer for the time. There's other stuff. We've spoken about it before. I mean, they've just announced today on mainstream media about some tablets that they're now working on that you can take for the onset of COVID. So there's other stuff that's going to be coming on the market. The thing about the vaccine has been discussed for weeks now, and Big Pharma runs 75% of vaccine studies, and that's a Lancet report. So you have to follow the money trail. Everything's about following the money trail these days. And I do have concerns when people who have vested interests at astronomical numbers that are involved in this have vested interests in doing this. And if you look down the line for the last 10, 15 years, there's been a concerted effort to get some kind of vaccination on a mandatory platform for the world, and it's never been able to get through. But all of a sudden, you come out with a virus. However, that virus has come about, and there is a virus there. But the underlying tones is it suits people's narrative.
It's not mandatory here, though, Duan.
And it's not mandatory, and it won't be. And it's a clever move by governments because they're putting the pressure on private enterprise to introduce vaccine passports. So we're not going to make it mandatory. They'll stand there and tell you, we're not going to make it mandatory. But, you know, all these here, your big airlines and your big cruise ships and all that, it's like, listen, guys, you've had millions of pounds worth of hands out to keep going for the last year or 2 years. Now it's time for payback. And that's kind of what we want is vaccine passports. But we can't actually say it because it's an infringement of human rights. And that's the big thing that's going on at the moment. I mean, there's a massive fights going on, which, again, mainstream media are not covering the amount of work that's going on behind the scenes from people trying to keep their freedoms. I mean, if anyone's seen the protests in London at the weekend, astronomical amount of people on the streets, thousands and thousands on the streets, going to people who were 100 years old marching because they're concerned about the future and they're concerned about their freedoms and where all this stuff is heading. And it's not about whether there's a virus or how bad the virus. It's about the alternative thinking behind it, because it'll always be turned to suit someone's narrative. And I think we have to be very conscious about our freedoms and liberties and where that's heading.
OK. All right, Duan, thanks for being with us today.
Take care, Andy. Bye-bye.
Good to talk to you. And Barry's with us now. Hello, Barry.
Hi, Andy.
Hi, good Barry.
How are you?
Good, good. Let me think, Barry. Hang on a minute. Gas.
Yes, sir.
Yes.
Just a little bit of gas today. Not too much gas for you. I just wanted to give a quick update to you and your listeners, particularly gas consumers here on the Isle of Man, about where the ongoing discussion regarding gas regulation is up to, and what I feel that I can do and other gas consumers should be doing from pretty much this point onwards. In I think it was January or February of this year, Tim Walz passed a motion to implement the powers of a new regulator. And that regulator is the Communications and Utilities Regulatory Authority. And that new regulator is due to report back to Tim Walz in May with its roadmap for gas regulation and gas pricing for the later part of this year and onwards. So we should all have a better idea about what's going to happen with our gas bills, certainly sort of for the later part of this year. But that's not really in itself acceptable, because what we haven't really had a discussion on is what's happened to our gas bills since 2018 when the NERA report came out up to the current and present day. and indeed up to the time that this that these new prices actually come into force. So what I would appeal really today to any listeners who are interested in their gas bills and would like to actually still have any chance whatsoever about getting a refund or a rebate from 2019 in particular right up to the present day, is that they should contact their MHK immediately and open up a discussion with that MHK to say that between 2018, when the NERA report came out, to this current present day, the government has actually wasted 3 years negotiating with Manx Gas, when in actual fact it could have implemented the powers of the regulator and we could have had lower gas prices a long, long, long time ago. So what I'm in effect saying is that unless we can actually sort out this issue of rebates or refunds pretty much immediately now, once this current government seizes, if you like, later on this year, the chances of getting a refund or a rebate will probably be at best nil.
Why do you think that?
Because I cannot see, in all honesty, first and foremost, how I will be in a position to carry on. I mean, certainly this year now, I'm doing this for 5 years. I don't really have the intention of carrying on for another 5 years. I just believe that now is the time that this current government have to sort out this issue, that there has to be a debate as to whether or not gas consumers are going to get a refund, a rebate for 2019 or 2020. And I believe that that discussion is due in the Maytimwald, that is the time to have that discussion when the Communications and Utilities Regulatory Authority come back with their roadmap. That if we miss this chance in May, I'm kind of worried that we've missed the big chance.
Gas consumer do, Barry, now, today?
If there's any gas consumers listening to the show right now, of which I'm sure there's plenty, and in particular, if their local MHK is a backbencher, they need to raise the discussion with that MHK to say that between 2018 up to the present day, the government have wasted 3 years of time negotiating with Manx Gas, when in actual fact we should have had lower gas bills. And it's also true that gas consumers signed a petition, because I had that petition laid in front of Timwald in February of this year. 2,000 plus signatures were on that petition, and that petition still hasn't been discussed. And basically request or plead with our MHK to raise a topic of debate at Timwald in May to say, when are we going to get our gas rebates and refunds as we were so promised?
Okay, Barry, really I appreciate you keeping this topic alive. Thanks for being with us today.
Thank you so much, sir. Thank you.
21 minutes to one on the man in line.
There's only one name you need when it comes to scrap. Castain Scrap Metal. Castain will scrap all metal and they're licensed to scrap all batteries, including dry cell and lead acid batteries. To get the best prices of copper, lead, aluminium, catalytic converters, brass and more, remember one name, Castain Scrap Metal. Castain Scrap Metal. Remember one number, 801337. 801337. Castain Scrap Metal.
Are you or a loved one looking for support at home? Do you require just 1 hour per week or 24-hour care? At First Care, our highly trained team of friendly carers are here for you with a tailored service that meets your needs. We provide cleaning and shopping support, hourly care, respite care, dementia care, overnight and live-in care in the comfort of your own home. Call us on 851 787 or visit firstcare.im. First Care at home. There really is no place like home.
Are you a reluctant landlord? Tired of tenant hassles? Cursed by constant maintenance? Tormented by empty properties producing no rent? Want to escape these worries or get out altogether?
At Prime Lettings, we understand your pain and have bespoke solutions to release you from these problems. Ring us on 616 707 for a free confidential chat.
Prime Lettings. We're on call and on the ball at 616 707.
It's time to enjoy your garden with Ramsey Garden Centre. where you'll find gorgeous summer bedding and basket plants, pots, compost and gravel, plus solar lights and electric and solar water features and plenty of lovely gifts for the garden. Yes, Ramsey Garden Centre have all you need for outdoor summer living. For news and updates, visit on Facebook. For help and information, call 816 506. Or better still, pop in to see what's new in store at Ramsey Garden Centre. Open 7 days a week on Albert Road.
The Man in Line with Andy Witt.
Good afternoon, 19 minutes before one. Note in from Margaret just said it must be over a year since there's been a cafe at the NSC. In addition to adults, a lot of young people use the facilities. So I think the cafe needs to be cheap and cheerful with a healthy option. I just wonder what your thoughts are. That's out to tender at the moment at the NSC, the cafe there. Lots of them, and certainly the Peel Swimming Pool Cafe is, well, sometimes more of a restaurant. Does very, very good business. Has got a high reputation. Do you think that's something we should aim for at the NSC, to make it a destination hospitality venue where people go even if they're not going to the NSC? Well, actually, that's something that's come up regarding parking. There are planned changes at three Douglas car parks helping to prevent vehicles being abandoned to free up some spaces. There's a proposed parking order giving the Department of Education, Sport and Culture powers to regulate parking at the Bowl, the NSC and the Hills Meadow facility at University College Isle of Man. They've had lots of increasing number of vehicles being dumped in various states of disrepair as well. The new regulations will mean that permits are going to be required for daytime parking at the three sites, and appropriate badges must be displayed on the disabled bays as well. Parking is something that excites lots and lots of opinion. Michael Joseph's with us from the Manx Taxpayers Alliance. You've been keeping your eye on parking, Michael, I guess. What was the story about Circular Road?
Hello, Andy. Good to be here with you. And so last week there was a proposal by the Isle of Man Government's Department of Infrastructure and Douglas Borough Council, who teamed up because they wanted to abolish and to remove one of the car parks that's been there for more than 10 years. I think that'll come as a surprise that the government is wanting to actively remove car parks that have been, you know, operating without much problem for the last decade or so.
And which car park particularly was it?
So it's a site that's 37 to 41 Circular Road. If you know Ashcroft's, the old store there opposite where Tai Tai restaurant is, it's just there.
Ah, I see. So what's happened now? Is the car park going to stay? Is it going to go? What's the story?
Well, what seems to have happened is that yesterday, and we've only just had this confirmed this morning, the planning committee has rejected the attempt by the DOI and Douglas Borough Council to remove it, and they've given it planning permission to exist for at least another 5 years, which is good news for Douglas citizens. It's good news for Douglas residents. Good news for Douglas office workers.
And what do you think?
It's really a victory for common sense.
Yeah. What do you think was behind wanting to get rid of? I mean, car parking is at something of a premium in Douglas.
Yeah, absolutely. And so I think it's that these people here in the government, they want to promote their active travel, and that's fine if you want to produce and enhance and complement transport by building new, you know, services for cyclists or pedestrians or public transport. That's great, but this should not be a war, and it should not be a war where you try and sabotage alternative transport mechanisms. And so we need a transport system that works for different people at different times and different vehicles or no vehicles at all, rather than, you know, trying to remove, you know, alternative options.
What's your opinion about active travel? Do you think it's got, I mean, don't mix my metaphors, but has it got legs?
Well, look, I ride my bike around town, and it makes sense for me because I'm a pretty young and pretty fit sort of guy. But there are other people who have, you know, children that who are, you know, other people who are a little bit more frail, people who are coming from further afield, people, you know, who are not so resilient to the hills and the weather that we sometimes get here in the Isle of Man. And so that's what's really important here is we have different transport services for different people, and what might work well for a middle-aged man in Lycra might not necessarily work well for a mother of three or a father of three who's trying to take their kids into town to buy school shoes.
What's the story about parking in Peel as well?
So I'm not sure what you're talking about there specifically.
I just thought you had a story about something in Peel as well. What's going on there?
I'm not sure what you mean there.
Oh, maybe.
Sorry, Andy.
Oh, sorry. Different caller. That was a different caller. Oh, Michael, listen. I can't let you go by unless I ask you the $64,000 question, and you know what it is.
What's the question? Sorry.
Are you going to be standing? Are you going to be standing in the House of Keys general election in September?
I don't know. Maybe, possibly. I haven't really, made a decision either way.
Well, you stood at the by-election in Douglas South. You got within a hair's breadth of becoming an MHK.
Yeah, you're right. I might well do it, but I'm not really interested in the politics of it all. I'm more interested in the policy, and today, it's good to chat to you about the importance of having, transport systems that work for everyone and not just a select few who can, ride their bike or can, who are fit enough to, walk and so on. So we need different things for different people. And so, and to answer your question about the politics of it all, I don't know, and to be honest, do I really care? I'm more interested in the policy of it all.
Interesting. Well, thanks for bringing that to our attention as well. We appreciate your opinion, Michael.
Thank you, Andy. Keep up the good work.
All right, good to talk to you. Howard's with us now. Hello, Howard.
Hello, Andy. How are you doing?
I'm fine. What do you think about this sea terminal?
Farcical. It's just another one of the government sit down and talk about these things. Has anybody noticed how much the promenades had X number of millions thrown at it? Now the flumes, the 3-year flumes, they've had X number of millions thrown at it. Now they're talking about the sea terminal, the terminal in Liverpool, and X number of another 5 million plus. Now these people that's in government are talking like monopoly money. But does nobody in government understand what a contract is? Because if you make a contract with somebody and you can't blame COVID, because the steam packet have made a contract with a shipbuilding company in South Korea and the pandemic is worldwide. So if that shipbuilding company came to the steam packet and said, I'm sorry, Mr. Steam Packet, but we've just had COVID out here, so we're going to have to stick another $10 million on the cost of your ship. And the Steam Packet, being a private company, although government owned supposedly, would say, I'm sorry, but I've got a contract here, it says that you build it for $30 million. You're not going to make it $40 million because you've breached the contract.
By my calculations, Howard, I think this is costing something a little less than £10,000 a day extra.
Yes, but who done the contract? Who made the contract up? Because there must have been contingency plans, and they haven't stated this. And it's the same with the promenade. They keep adding bits to it. Now, if the government are in breach of the contract, the company that's doing it can then up the ante. But if the company that's doing the job are not up to scratch, then the monies that are owed to the government, which is the people of the island who are paying for it, the government don't have any monies, we all understand that, but they're spending money like it's going out of fashion. And $1 million here and $1 million there and $5 million here and $5 million, and if they whispered quietly, they hope nobody's going to listen. And I listened to Barry Murphy, before about the gas, and I know that two MHKs presented a question to Keys, and this is going back right early on, and it was put in the bottom of the pile, and that particular day, there were only about 10 questions going to be asked because of the time limitation, and this was about number 13 or 14, so there's not a snowball's chance in hell of it being read that day. And it still hasn't. So this also gives me suspicion, and I'm very suspicious of the government, are hiding things. They're putting them in the long grass so they can disappear. And then as soon as the elections are coming up, they'll all be out there spouting, we'll do this for you, do that. I must admit, my gas bills have come down because the gas company, not the government, the gas company have reduced the amount I'm charged for gas and the daily tariff. That has all been reduced on the say-so of the gas company. Nothing to do with the government. But they seem to be... I question the ability of the people that's in the hierarchy in the government, civil servants, and they just... I don't know. I just can't understand it. They're not business people. They're there just... We've got X number of millions of pounds. What are we going to spend that on this week? Oh, come on, we'll have another splash down in Liverpool. Come on, we'll have another one down the promenade. And personally, I went down the promenade last week. It's the first time for ages. And it's an utter disgrace. And I will be shopping online as much as I can now. I will not go into Douglas to shop.
Did you see the latest thing today with those granite posts, Howard?
Go on.
They've put some granite. They're putting some special granite posts along the promenade to welcome people to the promenade. So they say, you know, Lock Promenade, Harris Promenade, Central Promenade, Queen's Promenade. They put the Harris Promenade one outside the Central Hotel on Central Prom.
That sounds about right.
They don't know their classic one. They don't seem to know the Central from their Harris.
No, no, you're right there, and that's the problem. If you drive out and where the road goes into the old Mount Murray Hotel, turns off to the right, they put one of those new high-rise curbstones. The only trouble is it's 100 yards from where the bus stops. It's on the other side of the little church road there, and it is right opposite one of those islands. So the bus stops there, no traffic can move.
All right, Howard, thanks for being with us today.
Thanks, sir.
Good to talk to you. Cruise ships are queuing up at the scrapyard, says this correspondent. So some have just been refurbished at a cost of millions. So maybe the sea terminal in Liverpool may be vainly vacant for other users, yes, but we're having our another, we're having our sea terminal come what may at the new improved price, eh? Fair enough, we don't want to add to the fiasco, says this correspondent. Still, the restrictions make it useless for normal travelling. You can only do that when they stop isolating and testing for travel. Also, why has the big demonstration against COVID-19 restrictions and policy in London not been reported on the media as well? Just by the way, something I want to draw your attention to. Tomorrow, the Public Accounts Committee will be taking oral evidence in public from Dr. Henrietta Ewart, and also from the Chief Minister, Mr. Quayle, and Will Greenhow, Chief Secretary of the Cabinet Office, one of the most senior civil servants on the Isle of Man. So tomorrow, the session is going to be held as part of the committee's inquiry into the use of genomic sequencing in response to a pandemic on the Isle of Man. That's tomorrow at 10:30. Dr. Ewart's in front of the committee. 2:30, the Chief Minister, and 3:30, the Chief Secretary is going to be in front of that committee. We'll be reporting on that. And yes, if you haven't seen these special granites, the granite obelisks, they put the Harris Promenade one outside the Central Hotel on Central Promenade. Mr. Baker answered the questions to Mrs. Edge and Mr. Shimmin shows, I think he's unfit to be a minister. When spending taxpayers' money, he won't answer questions or give details of the spend. Does he forget it's taxpayers' money? Well, I think Texter 384, Bill, what he was saying was he didn't want to conduct the business of the contract in the House of Keys. Now, he obviously thinks that's relevant. He doesn't want to talk about the commercial aspects of the contract in the forum of the House of Keys. Presumably, there is obviously something going on behind the scenes with the unexploded bombs and getting rid of all that in the Liverpool dock and the new bow thrusters and having to strengthen the wall. There obviously is going to be another story coming out of this, and we'll find out more about that. I also have a relative in Nobles, and I've been told I can't visit to them. I haven't been given a reason. It was the COVID cluster, so they're saying as well. If they didn't foresee the extra strengthening for the ferry terminal in Liverpool due to the bow thrusters, has any investigation been done in Douglas to make sure that the harbour can survive the new Manxman? Or is that going to be looked into once the new boat arrives for the first time? Says Paul W. Do you remember the hassle we had a couple of weeks ago with Douglas Harbour silting up? Sorry, an accumulation. That wasn't silting up.
Subscribe for free to a wide range of podcasts produced on the Isle of Man at manxradio.com, Apple, Google, or Spotify.
It was just an accumulation of silt, and there is a difference, apparently. if you have both doses of vaccine and if you go off the island, do we have to isolate when we return to the Isle of Man? Well, at the moment, yes. But we'll find out more on Thursday. Ian said, Andy, regarding the concerns over lockdown, we all have to realise we can't keep locking down financially. Government and businesses can't afford to carry on as we are. Businesses must return to normal or many will go under. The tourist industry has already lost two TTs. Many other local businesses who need the income will struggle to keep going. A policy of mitigation must continue to enable business to go on. We can't keep locking down or we'll run the risk of being out of business. Thank you, Ian, and thanks to Barry Redfern producing today on The Man in Line. Going to be back same time tomorrow.
WINT